Stu Leonard's has been in the headlines in the past couple of weeks, twice now, with two different products. They've had to recall them because of mislabeling, things being left off the label. And I don't want to talk specifically about this case, but I did think this was a good reason to have back on the show with us the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection, because I want to understand mislabeling. How does that happen? How common is it? How do places that sell food or beverages, how do they determine what goes on the label? Should every single item go on the, do they already go on the label? How do things get left off? I want to understand that process a little bit better. So I'm very excited to have back on the show with us Caitlin Krasselt, who is the communications director for the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. And Caitlin, I know you and I had talked about having you on more frequently, so I apologize that I dropped the ball. I'm going to try to do better in 2024, because I think it's really neat to understand the kind of the inside look as to how these items are handled and processed, and to talk about these sorts of stories, but on a more broad basis. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you.
Of course. I'm happy to be here. And yeah, we'd love to work out a regular schedule with you. If it's not me, it'll be someone even better from our agency. So,
well, I think you're pretty fabulous. And I will have my producer, Eric, kind of will start to work that out when we get off today. So don't worry. That is on my to-do list. For today, though, again, I know that the Department of Consumer Protection can't really comment, nor I don't think that they're really involved, correct me if I'm wrong, with the Stu Leonard situation. So I'm not here to kind of hammer you with questions about this specific case. But I did want to talk about mislabeling, because I got a lot of great questions from listeners about this, starting with, how does mislabeling happen? How does that even come about, where ingredients get left off the label of a product?
Sure. Well, you're right. I cannot speak to the specifics of the Stu Leonard's investigation that is ongoing. But as far as labeling in general, there are rules outlined by the Food and Drug Administration at the federal level. And then the process for labeling is different for each sort of manufacturer or business. So, and there's all different types of businesses in the food supply chain. So it really, that process is really dependent on the type of business that someone's running. But what I can talk about is, what is required to be included on that label, and why? And so the biggest thing that is absolutely required to be included on a label is a list of ingredients. And they should use the common or usual name, so the name that we all might know something by. It should have a statement of quantity, how many items are in that package, and it should have the ingredients in order from the most the highest content of that ingredient to the least. And it needs to include allergen labeling as part of that labeling. So sometimes it needs to be, you'll just see it appear in the ingredients list, and that's fine. And then you might also see a contained statement. So it might say, this product contains wheat and eggs or something like that. And those allergens, the nine major allergens that are required to be on labels are designated by the Food and Drug Administration. And these are allergens that are known to cause severe allergic reactions and even death. And those, of course, are milk, eggs, fish, shellfish, tree nuts, peanuts, wheat, and in 2022, they added soybeans to that list. And so those are the most critical things to be listed if they are included in the ingredients of a product.
So those are the ones that you're saying, Caitlin, you have to have some sort of labeling as well on the product saying contains wheat, contains dairy, something like that.
So it doesn't need to say contains. It can. So as long as it's in the ingredient list, they don't necessarily need a contain statement. And so if somebody does have a food allergy, they need to check that ingredients list. If they don't see a contain statement, that's really important. And that is, you know, the responsibility of the consumer, but it's also the responsibility of businesses to make sure that their products are labeled appropriately. So it is a two-way street there.
Well, I think so, you know, and again, I'm not trying to hammer into this specific case with Stu Leonard's, but, you know, when you look at the one of the items that is being recalled, the cookie recall, it came down to a nut allergy, essentially. And what my curiosity is why wouldn't a company, again, not talking about Stu Leonard's, I'm just talking about in general, why wouldn't a company go above and beyond and if anything, get more kudos, I would think, from consumers saying, wow, they're so good about their labeling. You know, they let me know when they have dairy in them. Because you're right, there will be products that have dairy, for example, in them, but there's no kind of warning label or whatever. You're sort of, as the consumer, you are responsible to look at the ingredients list. But, you know, in this situation, again, going back, this consumer did look at the list. According to her family and the attorney representing her, she did look at the list. And she even researched everything on the list. And yet there was no warning on there saying, hey, contains nuts, just in general saying contains nuts. Why wouldn't a company in general just go above and beyond and make that a requirement to also just say a warning label on the front of, hey, this is a dairy product, a nut product, an egg product, whatever?
Sure. So, again, I cannot speak to the specifics of the Stu Leonard's incident. Obviously, from what's been reported publicly, it was a tragedy. And I don't think any business wants that to happen, right? Most businesses, every business that I'm familiar with, wants to avoid that at all costs. And so, but the thing is, mistakes happen. And in this case, the mistake was really tragic. And so our responsibility as regulators is to find out what happened and what we can do to prevent anything like this from happening again. And that's what we're looking at in our investigation.
So Caitlin Krasholt is here, who is the communications director for the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. And we're just talking about labeling on different products. And so are you allowed to leave ingredients off of a label?
No, I believe all ingredients must be included on that label.
Okay. And something else that you had mentioned before is that obviously every single place that uses different manufacturing is going to have different ways of doing their labeling. But why isn't there a uniform way of everybody just using the same, I guess, standards for manufacturing or just using the same process?
Yeah, that's a good question. Our food system is really complex. It's interstate and international. And our system of labeling foods is also pretty old. It's something that's been happening for hundreds of years at this point. And, you know, it's something that I think legislators at both the federal and state level may look at some point. But, you know, as for what's in place right now, that's all I can speak to.
We have Caitlin Krasholt here, who is the communications director for the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. Let's talk about the complaint process, Caitlin, if you don't mind. If people needed to make a complaint about a product they have a problem with, what does that process look like?
Absolutely. So we do have a complaint process. If someone wants to file a complaint, they can do that with our office, and we have a team that will look into that and determine if any action is necessary. The easiest way to file a complaint and the best way to file a complaint is online at our website, ct.gov/DCP. And we do encourage consumers in that complaint process to include as much information as possible, photos, et cetera, if they have a complaint to make. And that could be related to anything, but today we're talking specifically about food-related issues. So that is one place you could file a complaint. We also encourage consumers, before they do that, to go directly to the business and see, you know, if they can get their money back, if they have an issue, or, you know, work with the business to resolve the issue.
I also wanted to, if you don't mind, switch gears a little bit, Caitlin, because I don't know if people realize that the Department of Consumer Protection, you also regulate gaming in the state of Connecticut, don't you?
We do, yeah. We do a lot at the Department of Consumer Protection, and gaming is one of those things.
So, I mean, we're going into the big game this weekend, obviously. Football fans here and across the country are going to be placing bets. And I wasn't sure if your department has been, you know, kind of getting the word out there about, you know, handling gaming and certainly the betting that goes on in Connecticut and doing that safely.
Absolutely. So we do see a lot of sports wagering around this time of year. There's a lot of sports going on, and particularly going into Super Bowl weekend. We know that's a really popular time for people to place wagers. And so we just remind people that if they choose to do that, if they choose to gamble, that they do that responsibly, that they set time and money limits for themselves. You can do that in the apps. You can do that just, you know, for yourself, and stick to those limits. You know, if you set a limit of $1,000, stick to that. The other thing we like to remind people is that there are only 3 authorized platforms to offer sports wagers in the state of Connecticut. Those are DraftKings, FanDuel, and Fanatics. And so if you are wagering, make sure you're doing it on one of those licensed platforms so that if something does go wrong, if something happens, there are protections in place for you. If you're wagering on an illegal gaming platform, it's a little more difficult for us to help you out. And then in addition to that, there's 10 retail locations throughout the state. Those are listed on our website. So if there are retail locations that are not licensed to offer wagering, that is also illegal. And so we would recommend, again, that people only, if they choose to wager, to do so on authorized platforms. And finally, we do work really closely with the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling, as well as our counterparts at the Connecticut Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. And if there's anybody who is struggling with a gambling addiction, or they know somebody who's struggling with a gambling addiction, there are resources available both on our website and on those websites of our sister agencies.
Caitlin, really quickly, I know you just mentioned before, if people are using something besides the 3 platforms that are approved here in Connecticut, an illegal gaming platform, I was curious, have we seen, you know, since we made online gambling and betting available, sports betting available to Connecticut, made that legal, have we seen an uptick in those types of scams, you know, illegal gaming platforms? Has that been an issue in recent years?
Yeah, we have seen, that's a good question. And yes, we have seen illegal or unlicensed platforms marketing to consumers. And it's tricky because they look real. They send really sophisticated flyers. Their websites look legitimate, but they are not licensed by the state of Connecticut. And so that means that if you were to place a wager on one of their platforms, your money would not be protected. The ones that are licensed by us are subject to really strict regulations. They are going to have to stick to those regulations in terms of providing protections for your personal information. That includes your bank account information, right? This is money that you're using. And just your personal information in general, that's all going to be more protected on a licensed platform. And if something happens to it, they're a licensee of ours and there's a recourse for action. But if you are using one of these illegal platforms, a lot of times they are doing business offshore, and it can be really difficult to recover your money, and it can be just a real headache if you have to go through the steps to protect yourself from identity theft if your information is compromised.
Mm-hmm. Well, Caitlin, I really appreciate all of this information. Is there a place people can go to? Do you have a website where people, if they want to learn more about some of these topics, they can do so?
Absolutely. So if you want to learn more about gaming in the state of Connecticut, you can visit ct.gov/gaming. And if you're specifically looking for information about problem gaming or our self-exclusion list, you can go to ct.gov/problem gaming. And if you're looking for general information about the Department of Consumer Protection or to file a complaint, you can visit ct.gov/DCP, like Department of Consumer Protection.
All right, Caitlin, I look forward to having you back on really soon, or somebody with the department. And I thank you so much for being such a great resource for WICC. Really appreciate it.
Of course, anytime.
All right, Caitlin again, who is the communications director for the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. And I definitely plan to have Caitlin Krasselt and anybody else, any other members from the department come on the show to kind of talk more about these types of topics, because I do think that a lot of times we don't even realize what a lot of departments do, their full function in our state. And I think they have a wealth of knowledge to share with us. So I look forward to having them back on.
Melissa in the Morning spends a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Senator, our job and what we take seriously is making sure that we build industry-leading tools, find harmful
to content, make money,
take it off the services,
to make money,
and to build tools that empower parents.
So you didn't take any action. You didn't take any action. You didn't fire anybody. You haven't compensated a single victim. Let me ask you this. There's families of victims here today. Have you apologized to the victims? Would you like to do so now?
Well,
they're here. You're on national television. Would you like now to apologize to the victims who have been harmed by your product? Show them the pictures.
This was probably one of the bigger moments in a Senate Judiciary Committee meeting last week, where there were five CEOs of major social media platforms grilled by both sides of the aisle. Senators, including our very own Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal, who really is one of the leaders in this Judiciary Committee and holding the feet to the fire of these social media platforms, making insane amounts of money, profiting off of people, especially young people. And at one point, we played for you here on our show the exchange between, you heard Mark Zuckerberg there before, who is the owner of Meta, which is in charge of platforms like Facebook and Instagram. At one point, there was an exchange between Senator Blumenthal and Mark Zuckerberg. And then another time where Senator Blumenthal asks all five of those CEOs if they are on board with a piece of legislation, a bipartisan piece of legislation that Senator Blumenthal co-sponsored, co-wrote, and it puts better protections in place for our kids, and the majority of them said no. The majority of them said there are aspects of the law we like, but there are parts that we want to fix up. And essentially, two of them said, we're on board, we'll continue on with the work that you're doing, we agree with it. But the big guys, the TikTok, the Facebook, the Instagram, Twitter, no. They are not fully on board. So where do we go from here? Senator Richard Blumenthal coming back on the show to talk about this. Hey, Senator Blumenthal. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I thought you were going to play another excerpt from the hymn.
No, you're fine. It was sorry about that.
It was tremendously dramatic, Melissa. Not only that exchange that you played between Senator Hawley and Mark Zuckerberg when he apologized to the families, but really throughout the hearing, for example, when I asked him about internal emails, that is to say, Meta's own emails, where he was approached and he was told by his own leadership team
that we're not doing enough.
More.
Right.
You're not doing enough. You need to invest more. And he rejected that request. So all of this kind of boasting, as he did at the hearing, about how we're doing as much as we can, we're spending billions of dollars, we have all these people assigned to it, all of it really was emblematic of the hypocrisy that we've seen over these past years from Meta, as well as from all the other companies that were represented. And you're absolutely right. Two of them did endorse the Kids Online Safety Act. It's also known as COSA, Snap, and X, formerly known as Twitter. But even for them, I want to see what they really do. I want to see them put their money where their mouth is and really support Kids Online Safety Act. Because what we've seen over the years is all of these social media companies devoting armies of lawyers and lobbyists, spending billions of dollars to oppose us, even though they may say, oh, we're doing everything we can for kids. The fact of the matter is the business model here is more kids, more of their eyeballs for longer periods of time, riveted on the screen, seeing all the toxic content about eating disorders, bullying and harassment, suicidal self-harm content, this toxic content driven by the algorithms. And that's their business model, to make more money with more eyeballs because it gives them more advertisers. And you are absolutely right.
So where do we go from here, Senator Blumenthal? You have big tech basically saying, we like aspects of what you're saying. I mean, one of the, I think, biggest takeaways is the fact that we know that there's not only a lot of content being shoved down the throats of our children and just our general population, not just the kids, just all of us in general, but some of the most influential platforms like TikTok and Instagram, they're essentially not fully on board with COSA. So it just means more hurdles for us to get through. So what is sort of the alternative? Where do we go from here?
The alternative is to pass my bill, the Kids Online Safety Act, COSA, which can be done literally in the coming weeks, perhaps a couple of months, because it would provide tools. You know, kids and their parents want to take back their online lives. They feel they've lost control to those algorithms. They don't understand the algorithms. Nobody does outside of Meta or the other big social media companies because they've kept them secret. So first and foremost, giving them tools to disconnect and for parents to oversee and to have those tools to take action when their kids are spending too much time or devoting their attention to these toxic content features.
You wouldn't need approval from those social media companies to do that, to give those tools to parents. And the reason I ask that is because then why, you know, there's such strong bipartisan support. Why not just pass COSA now then? Or do you need the approval of these platforms to make it happen?
We don't need the approval of the platforms to pass a bill in Congress. And we do have strong bipartisan support. You know, COSA has been co-sponsored by almost half of all the United States senators, almost half. And it's evenly divided, Republican, Democrat. Sometimes, you know, you have half the Senate, but it's all Democrat or it's all Republican. This is evenly divided. And Marsha Blackburn, Republican of Tennessee, and I have led this effort, again, bipartisan, for the last 3 years. And we've been opposed by these big tech companies. Social media has been against us.
So that's why the bills aren't passing, because there's like internal politics that I don't understand. So if there's a lot of strong bipartisan support, why is it going to take a few months for us to pass this then?
Well, right now we are occupied with the challenge of passing a supplemental to aid Ukraine and Israel, a budget with appropriations for all of the government. We've kicked that can down the road. We still need to pass that budget. So it could take a couple of weeks, but this hearing gave us really important momentum. And going back to your last question, no, we don't need their approval, but their opposition has really stymied us. And the reason is, I'm going to be very blunt, they make campaign contributions, they have employees who are influential. The big tech titans are themselves influential. People want to be on their good side. Mark Zuckerberg, he's a celebrity. And they have deployed armies of lawyers and lobbyists. It's classic Washington. Easier to block something than to get it done. And what we want to impose on them is not only the responsibility to give tools to parents to oversee their kids and kids tools to disconnect, but also to impose a duty of care. In other words, a responsibility, a legal obligation. When they know they are causing harm, to prevent it or mitigate it rather than exploit it for more profits.
I guess then, Senator Blumenthal, my point being is if for 3 years you and Senator Blackburn have been working on this, you have strong bipartisan support, but basically big tech has continued to have enough strong forces. They've only gotten stronger, especially since the pandemic and all the information that we've learned about since with social isolation, things like that. I mean, what would give us the confidence that even in a few weeks, let alone a couple of months, we actually will see COSA pass? Because I think families need those tools now more than ever. I think they've needed them for years now.
They do need them now more than ever. And you're absolutely right about the pandemic. It has isolated a lot of kids, particularly, you know, they've been doing their homework remotely. They have been using these social media sites more than ever, and they've gained in power as a result, economic power and political power.
Right.
But we've gained in power too. And the reason is that people have come to realize the negative effects. Now, you know, we've been talking about all the damage that can result from social media,
sure.
But you know, they can connect people. It can
be, of course,
a learning mechanism.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like anything.
So don't misunderstand. I'm not advocating that we abolish Meta or the internet.
No,
or
you want more
media.
Safeguards in place. I guess my biggest fear here, though, is that they also have only gotten stronger. We've gotten stronger with our data, improving that they could do more, but they also just continue to get richer and richer and stronger and have more and more legal experts to back them. So I guess my concern is, do we really have the confidence that this could actually pass this year?
I have no confidence when it comes to the United States Congress. I hate to say it, but, you know, if I said I'm confident this measure is going to be approved in the next few weeks or few months, I'd be lying, and people would know I'd be lying because they've seen so often the Congress fail. And I don't say it with any real humor. It is, in fact, shameful how little we've done in the last 6 months or year. But we got a lot done before that with the Inflation Reduction Act, which provides for environmental measures, with the other steps to not only reduce inflation, but also build roads and bridges, provide better infrastructure, the Infrastructure and Jobs Act. But on this issue, we have been stymied by the power of social media. So I'm not confident. We're in a fight. I'm going to use every potential weapon at my disposal. Most important, and I mean this sincerely, going back to those hearings, Melissa, the parents and the young people themselves are such powerful voices and faces. We had an advocacy day that we helped to organize where we had those parents in the hearing room. Mark Zuckerberg, when he apologized, was facing probably 20 to 30 parents. And the force of their advocacy was simply undeniable, not only in the hearing room, but when they went around to my colleagues, their offices, spoke to them and their staff about how they lost children because of bullying on the internet, how they've lost loved ones because of eating disorders. So that's really, I think if we can get this done, it will be because we have this grassroots group. And
we have parents who are saying exactly how this impacted their kids in the worst way. Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see. Senator Blumenthal, thank you so much for the follow-up, and certainly we'll continue to follow the story right here on WICC. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Senator Blumenthal here on WICC.
Let's get wild. It's the Zoo Minute with Greg Dancho from Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
We've got the Chinese New Year coming up, and it's the Year of the Dragon. So let's talk about the dragons at the Beardsley Zoo. Greg Dancho is here for all of that fun stuff. What's going on, Greg? How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, we've been celebrating the Lunar New Year or Chinese New Year for many years here at the zoo. Mm. And, of course, that is happening this Saturday. We'll be having a celebration at the zoo this Saturday in our greenhouse and Kathy Brady Education Center with a bunch of activities, information. I think maybe the dragon will be coming out. We do have a dragon that does come out, and kids can be involved with that. Maybe get underneath the dragon and run around and do a little fun stuff. The weather looks like it's going to be good for Saturday, so we're really excited about it. We do this every year. The Chinese zodiac calendar has been used to predict the future of health and prosperity. Last year, we did the Year of the Rabbit here at the zoo. We're looking into working with the New England cottontail, is something that's an endangered species. So that kind of the Year of the Rabbit kind of dragged that. That kind of brought us out. Think about doing something like that with an endangered species. And this year is the Year of the Dragon, 2024. Especially they call it the Wood Dragon. Dragon is in the Chinese culture is for intelligence, wisdom, loyalty. Maybe people came to our GLOW program last year and this year. We did have our Chinese Lantern Festival, which was GLOW, and we had a 90-foot long dragon here on the zoo grounds. So that was, again, really cool to kind of maybe do a little precursor of Chinese New Year this year with the dragon. But in zoos, we don't have any dragons here right now. We did have a bearded dragon here, and her name was Jabba. Jabba was here for many years. It was part of our education program.
Oh, yeah.
They're called Beardies. Mm. Jabba went with me up to Hartford a bunch of times, up to the Capitol to meet with the legislators. And they're just a really cool little creature because they are not very aggressive. The thing is that they're really in the very favorite animal in the pet trade. They can live up to 10 years. They can be they're a foot long. Some people, again, have to learn how to take care of pets. We really don't recommend exotic animals as pets. So if you ever really want to, you really have to learn about these animals. But bearded dragons, they're called Beardies also. They are really spiked. They really look like a little dragon. They're really, really interesting animals.
Kind of to comment on that, if you don't mind, Greg, really quickly.
Yeah.
I have noticed more and more people with bearded dragons for pets in recent years.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's become the pet, I'd say the pet du jour.
Yeah, why is that?
It's interesting because we go through cycles within the pet community.
Sure.
Of different animals.
Tigers.
We went through turtles. pigs.
I make a light joke, obviously, about that because that's a very serious issue. But the pocketbook pigs or whatever that was a phase.
Iguanas is part of the dragon myth.
Sure.
Dragons. When you look at the old movies. The old movies had the dragons were usually green iguanas that were just dressed up and made in part of these dragon or dinosaur movies or dragon movies. They were used for that.
That's hysterical.
But really the real dragon that is out there that you can go into zoos to see and is one of my favorites in the world is and one that when I was a kid again long time ago. I used to watch Johnny Quest. I'm not even sure if Johnny Quest is around anymore. One of the episodes of Johnny Quest, had Komodo dragons, and Komodo dragons are animals that live up to they get to be 10 feet long. They're the largest of the lizards. And now just suppose we have the largest lizard is 10 feet long. The smallest lizard right now is the nano chameleon. That was just discovered in 2021. So think about that. This is an animal that was just discovered in 2021 in Madagascar, and it is only 3 centimeters long.
Oh my gosh!
Full grown.
What a little baby.
3 centimeters.
Oh my
god! Everybody get your ruler out. No, that may be not considered a dragon, but Komodo dragons are dragons. They are called dragons because they're so large. They live in the islands of Southeast Asia. They were. Vulnerable on the conservation list, but now they are endangered, and their population now is only about 1,400 in the world right now.
Is that because of the trading industry, Greg?
No, this one, we go back to climate change.
We go to
climate change. They live on small islands in Southeast Asia, and those islands are starting to sink. People live on those small islands, so their habitat is being taken away. Habitat loss is being taken away. So now these animals are becoming endangered. Now they are part of the SSP program in the United States, and zoos do have a breeding program for them. And as a matter of fact, just in 2021, 10 were hatched at the San Antonio Zoo. And that was a really big deal to have these animals now are in our human care and are being able to procreate and have offspring. So again, for an endangered species, very, very important.
Have you thought to bring them to the Beardsley Zoo? Has that ever been something that comes up?
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. We had there was a time when we had traveling animals. And at some point, we think that we thought about bringing animals in that were like special guests. In years past, we had a white alligator that was here. We brought in a warthog that was here. There were traveling koalas. There was traveling Komodo dragons. Something that we really don't do anymore. And the reason for that is the animal welfare.
Sure,
because we just
that makes sense.
By moving these animals around to different locations and spending only 6-7 months in the location and moving on really is not the best way to do it. So, yeah, we thought about Komodo dragons here at the zoo, but again, 10 feet long, big animal, need a lot of space. Their jaws will expand just like a snake, so they can gobble up large prey items.
That's terrifying.
They are an impressive animal. Like I said, Johnny Quest, when I saw these animals as a kid, and really was cool. Now, the only other dragon that we don't have here at the zoo, but you can also see in zoos, is called the Draco lizard, which is the flying dragon. It sounds scary, but again, if we're talking about dragons, we have the Komodo dragon, big guy going across the ground, large jaw, kind of scary if you ever see them coming at you.
Sure.
Then you go to the Draco lizard. Draco lizard doesn't get very long, doesn't get very big, but they do have a set of elongated ribs that they can open up. So when they go from tree to tree, they can glide. So
but
it's not really a flying dragon. They're a gliding dragon.
Fire out of their mouths, though. None
of these dragons will have fire. None of these dragons have fire. There was a Komodo dragon. Back to the Komodo dragon. People used to think that the Komodo dragon had a very, very dirty mouth. And that if you were bit by a Komodo dragon, you were going to die of sepsis within days.
Oh, my gosh.
And they thought that Komodo dragons did that. They thought they would grab a prey item, like a cow, by the leg and chew on it a little bit and then let it go and then follow it, and that knowing that the animal will die a few days later. So studies have been done now and found that that's not the case. That is not the case.
That's
they may do that. It may happen. It may happen as a matter of course. If an animal does escape from a Komodo dragon, but they don't do that. Their mouths are not dirtier than any other mouth. And actually they say that they're really relatively clean. So again, that's one of the myths of the Komodo dragon, that you would get bit by a dragon and you were done. You know, they would die, you know, days later because of sepsis.
Wow, interesting. Well, I definitely learned an awful lot about dragons heading into the Lunar New Year. It's pretty cool stuff, Greg Dancho. Thank you so much.
We're excited. Again, then it's like mid-winter program here at the zoo. Get people come out, remembering that we're open year-round, to come out and enjoy the zoo. We talked about this last week. We haven't had a winter. So, again, come on out. It's been great. Prairie Dog exhibit's moving along. And we did put our maned wolves together. I think we mentioned this a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
They were going to do the maned wolves together. We
Very
did put
exciting.
The maned wolves together. And a little squabble here and there, but they seem to be getting along very well. So
it's
we're
exciting.
Really happy about that.
And spring is coming, so we'll see what that means.
Spring
Greg Dancho, thank you so much. We'll talk again next week.
Take care, Melissa.
All right. Our Zoo Minute with Greg Dancho right here on WACC.